I know a man is clever by his answers. I know a man is wise by his questions. This is Dr. Harella Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with our thought for today. I know a man is clever from his answers. I know a man is wise by his questions. We're never really too excited about clever people, although we applaud them and we enjoy listening to them and we feel that they are just wonderful. And they do have a way of turning phrases that make us sit up and listen and make us want to quote them and things like that. But the second part of this statement, I know a man is wise by his questions, that's us. That's us. This morning as I was walking the meditation path, I sat on the bench and just became still for a while. And then I said, okay, I have my statement. I am peace. I am love. Good statement. What does that mean? What does that mean to be peace and love? And I listened. And all sorts of ideas came up. All sorts of concepts came up of how I should be peace and how I should be love. But nothing seemed to be, you know, ticking me on, ticking me off. Nothing seemed to be getting me excited. And I listened, and I listened, and I said, well, what about Heinz? How is Heinz peace and love? And nothing came up. And I said, well, how about Sylvia? How is she peace and love? And again, nothing came up. And I said, how is Ellen peace and love? And how is Ingeborg peace and love? And nothing came up for either of them. Why is this that nothing came up? Why is this that nothing came up? I was listening and I was thinking of each of you as peace and love, but nothing came up. And then all of a sudden some things started coming up. Things started coming up, well, I am more interested in the now than I am in the isness. I am more interested in my everyday activities than I am in thinking about the divine. I am more interested in having a wonderful relative world than I am in living in my divine world. And I thought, does that apply to them? Does that apply to them? And how does that apply to them? How does that apply to them? How does it apply to them that they're living in the relative world, that they're living in the now? Why don't they live in the divine? Now, what is the divine? See, there you go. I know a man is wise by his questions. So when we ask that question, what is the divine? What is the divine? In the divine, will I have my relationships? Will I have my people that I know? Will I have my friendships? Will I have my dogs and cats? And will I have my wife and husband and friends? And the answer is no. Well, I don't like that. I know you don't like that. I know you don't like that. You all protest. I want to be unconditional love. I want to love everyone equally and wonderfully. I don't want to have judgments. I don't want to be touched. I want unconditional love. But you aren't willing to pay the price. To pay the price for unconditional love, it's not to have any children, not to have any relatives, any wives, husbands, any family. It's not to have those things. Not to have these things. Now, what does that mean, not to have those things? I mean, we're human beings, and we have family, and we have circumstances, and we have a business, we have a life, we have an activity that keeps us going. We have happy thoughts, and we have unhappy thoughts. We have the world we're living in the now, in the now. And we say, we want to live in the now. We want to know that we are happy. We want to know that we are peaceful. We want to know that we are joyous. Well, did you ask yourself the question? How can I live in my allness? How can I live in unconditional love? How many times a day have you thought about living in unconditional love? How many times a day have you considered that as a possibility? And the answer is none. Not even one. You haven't considered it because your tendency is to be judging. Your tendency is to be saying, well, I like this person because they're so much fun. I don't like that person because of the things they're doing. They're not doing nice things. And I like the dog when he behaves, and I don't like the dog when he doesn't behave. You see, in the allness, the isness, and in the unrelative, an absolute thinking, you might say, could an absolute not like what it created? Of course, you can't conceive of an absolute creating anything. But could an absolute, in its environment, in its universe, in its world, could it have anything that it did not delight in? Could it have anything in its world that was not absolutely perfect and good and beautiful? Could it have anything in its world that it would have a happy thought about or an unhappy thought about? No. Now, that doesn't sound like much fun. And we're talking about living in the now. And we're saying living in the now is so important. Well, that's good. And if you will read what it says in all writings where they talk about living in the now, whether it's something I've written or something that Jesus wrote or something Toll wrote or something, it's all the same thing. It's relative. It's relative. You're living in the relative world. It sounds, you know, esoteric. It sounds way out. It sounds deep and way out all at the same time. It sounds marvelous and magic and, oh, hey, this is a new way of looking at it. But stop and think. When you stop and think and ask yourself a question, okay, I'm living in the now. What am I doing? I'm eating, breathing, drinking, sleeping, talking, living. What if you were living in absolute? What if you're living in unconditional love? Let's say unconditional love, that's more conceivable than absolute for us. What if you're living in unconditional love? What sort of an attitude would you have in your mind about anything? Well, the first thing is you'd have an attitude about yourself. And the attitude about yourself is, I love everything. Everything that is me. I am everything that is. And I cannot dislike anything because it's me. And I don't want to like something because it's me. Everything is me. Everything is the is. Everything is, let's leave the is alone for a minute. Everything is the now, living in the now. You see, when we get to the point of unconditional love, we're verging on the is. We're verging on the unconditional allness that we are. We're verging on that aspect of our beingness which knows no relative concept for it. And is this what you want? Well, obviously not. This is not what you want, to verge on the concept of your absolute being. Because if you would verge on the concept of your absolute being, you could not have any conditions in your life. You could not think a negative thought or a positive thought. You could not think of any relative aspect of your being. And this is not much fun. Not much fun. But here we are. I know a man is clever from his answers, and I know a man is wise by his questions. What sort of questions do you ask? Do you ask the eternal questions? Do you get any answers? Who am I? Where? Why am I here? Where am I going? That sort of thing, you know? Do you get any answers? No. And you can't get answers. Look, the billions and billions and billions, and I could go on and on and on, of people who have lived on the face of the earth, just the earth alone, during its existence, during which time it housed people, or beings, or consciousness. How many people would that be? Ooh, that would be a great number. A great number of people. Now, these people, have any of them ever written, or said, or revealed the concept of who they are, why they're here, where they're going, what their purpose is? Now, some allude to it, some direct your attention to it, but it's not a textbook that's right here and says, this is it, this is it. It's not the Catholics or the Protestants or anybody else like that. It's not science or it's not fiction. It is, this is it. Is there a book like that? And there is no book like that. No one has ever written it, because when you are aware of your divine self, you have no desire to say anything. You have no desire to tell anyone of your path. You have no desire to tell anyone of the illumination, the inspiration that you had. This goes with the same concept we talked about before when we said, if I touch Ingeborg under her arm, she'll recognize I touched her under her arm. But until that moment, she didn't even think of her under her arm. She didn't even think of the cells that were in her arm. And if I say to Ingeborg, Ingeborg, think about your brain. How many cells are in your brain? She said, well, I have no idea. And I said, there's billions, trillions of cells in your brain. And they're all doing various things. You tell me what any one of those cells are doing, and I'll show you a master, you know? And of course, if you tell me what any one of those cells are doing, unless I'm a master, I would not be able to understand what you're talking about. Because you are dealing in the concept of the allness, in the concept of the isness. Now, you're dealing it on a relative level. When you deal with it on the infinite level, or the absolute level, or the divine level, whichever term we want to give it, and give it all the terms, that's okay too, then what happens? You have no desire to tell anybody about it. You see, the trouble with Ingeborg is, Ingeborg is 99 and 99 one hundredths percent absolute. And she is one little teeny bit relative. And that one little teeny bit relative makes her physical, makes her human, makes her limited. And that one little teeny bit stops her from being the allness that she is. Now, her question, you think, would certainly be, you know, how do I get a hold of that one little tiny bit there that didn't get the message, or that I'm not a master of? How do I do that? And you don't do that. You see, our tendency is to go around saying, I am bad. My body is bad. My body hurts. My body is not doing the right thing. All these things are not working in divine order. And so you create that as a reality. Instead of having the teeny, teeny, teeny tip of the iceberg, you have the whole iceberg exposed. And you blame the whole iceberg. And you don't even recognize that the whole iceberg is all good. And just the tip of the iceberg, which has been sticking out in the environment of the world, has the dust layers on it and has all the other things on it. And this is what we do. This is what we do. We look not at the little tiny bit which can be remedied or blessed, but we look at the all of the physical body and we say, it's terrible, you know? It's my genes, it's my chromosomes, it's my DNA, it's this, it's that, it's the other thing, you know? And I have hardening of the arteries, I have this, I have that, I have the other. You name it, name it, name it, and surely you got it. Now, did you ever go through your body and say, I have wonderful eyes, I have wonderful nose? Did you ever go through? Did you go through the infinite number of possibilities of why you live in this beautiful temple you got? And what this temple is? Well, I guarantee you, if you start, you'll never finish, and you'll never get anywhere. So rather, wrap it all up and say, my body is a temple of the living spirit. And every organ, action, function of my body is perfect. Now, when you say every organ, action, function of my body is perfect, you are not allowing for your hangnail. You know what a hangnail is? You're not allowing for your sneeze. You're not allowing for your eyesight or your hearing or anything else that you want to play with. So you're not allowing for them. And that is just fine. Now, what we want to do is to train our consciousness to accept what we're telling it. When the divine speaks to us, through us, in us, as us, we want to learn to accept it. And we don't do that. We are judging and saying, I wish I were perfect. I wish I were wonderful. I wish I were whole. I wish I were intelligent. I wish I were... You see, and all these things that we're doing, the mind is saying, oh, you don't want to use that portion of your reality which exists. And it just sort of disappears. It's still there. But you have closed it off. You see, I know a man is wise by his questions. And the question is not, are you there? Is this infinite allness in me, as me, through me? But rather, how can I use it? What ways can I apply this in my life? What ways can I apply in my life my perfection? Well, we have been teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching for many, many, many months, years, whatever, that you cannot be taught anything. You only reveal what you already know. And while a teacher may come up to you and say, 2 times 2 is 4, until you say, ah, yes, 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 I apprehend that, I accept that, I realize that, and so it is. Then it's so. The teacher can teach, 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 or give, 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 but until the moment that you connect with the knowledge that you already have of that, whatever it may be, it's not yours. It's not yours. Little children who are in school, and the teachers bore them. The children don't learn what the teacher wants to share with them because the teacher is bored. Once the teacher gets excited, when the teacher gets excited about whatever they're teaching, the kids get excited. And they learn like sponges. What does that mean? They reveal that they already know it, like sponges. And there's no learning process. There's no memory process. Many children, they go to school, as the saying goes, they never crack a book. Where do they get the information? Where do they get the information? They get it from the all-knowingness that is within them. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful should our elementary school, our early schools, or our parents, even before you go to school, teach that you know it all and you're merely revealing it by whatever device or choice you do. You're playing on the guitar and you're revealing how well you can play. And if you don't want to play, don't think you can play, don't want to be bothered, if you're bored, you'll never express how well you can play. Same goes for these geniuses, these people who have autistic minds, and these autistic minds, they're not harmonious with a normal life, but those kids, you know what they can do? They sometimes can come up with tremendous mathematical conclusions that even a computer has difficulty arriving at so quickly. They can times, multiply, divide, fraction, square root, do all these things. How can they do that? How can they do it? They've never had those courses. And that's a human course. That's a relative course. How can they do that? Because all is in the divine mind. And they have somehow tuned into it. Strangely, but they've tuned into it. Now, why can't we do that? We don't want to. We haven't tuned into it. We can. And when we tune into it, then what happens? Then we too know all these things. So, I know man's wise by his questions. Now, do you want to do these things the autistic children can do? Or autistic adults? With the magic of knowledge and so forth, boom, 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 they come off with all these wonderful pieces of information? Or would you rather be someone who has all knowledge in you and you're aware of it, and as you choose to use it, it's there for you to use, just like that? Because it's all there. And I say, Sylvia, what was your great-grandfather's first name? And Sylvia said, let me think about that. Now, Sylvia's stupid. She knows it. Then stop saying, let me think about it. Just say, it's so. But she hasn't trained herself to that. She has trained herself to say, I have put that away in my file cabinet. I do know, but I have to think about it a little moment, you know, and go back through the generations and stuff. But this is what we do. We say we put it away. And what we really want to say is, I know that I know that I know. And when we say that, then click, there's the answer. We had not thought of that answer for many, many years, if ever. We may never even have known what our great-grandfather's first name was. It may never have been mentioned in our presence or in our awareness, you know. But, poof, up she comes. You see, it's a matter of, I know a man is wise by his questions. Socrates taught that way too. He said, listen, decide for yourself. Come to your own conclusions. Learn to listen to your own mind. Learn to listen to your own thought, your own being, your own reality. And when you do that, then you are indeed into your divine self. But educational organizations don't want to call it your divine self, which is understandable. They don't want to call it your spiritual growth. They don't want to call it anything that smacks of that which cannot be seen. Because education, academic education especially, wants it to be something that can be touched, something that can be replicated, something that can be shown again and again and again that it's so. One man, he invented something, I think, like the computer. But he did not have the mental ability to describe why it worked. He just said, this is it, and it works. And it did. And they poo-pooed him. You know, they said, it can't be done, and it ain't so. And so, in desperation, he jumped out the window and tried to kill himself. You know? It didn't work. He lived. But the thing is, you don't have to replicate these things. You don't have to replicate these things. Heinz? How many Heinzes are on this earth exactly like you? Just one. You're number one. You're the only one. There's nobody else who doesn't care about the things you don't care about and who cares about the things that you care about in exactly the same proportion. You see? So, you must answer your own questions. And you must ask your questions. And the questions you ask yourself right now are kind of silly. All of you. You're asking yourself, why do I feel good? Why do I feel bad? Why do I feel rich? Why do I feel poor? You don't have to know why you feel a way. You just say, I am. And when you say, I am, then you are all these things, and you live in it now. And the most important thing in spiritual studies and spiritual growth, and any kind of growth really, and even academic growth, you cannot do it for somebody else. You have to do it for yourself. You cannot teach another person. All of these people many of these people who take our courses, they say, I want to go out and teach. I have a calling of God to go out and preach and teach and heal. And I think to myself, go somewhere else. Go somewhere else. I tell them, you're number one. It's for you alone. If you choose to go out and share it by living it, super. If you choose to go out and share it by teaching it and showing it and all that stuff, great. But first, do it for yourself. First, be the divine yourself, and first, be the wonderful being that you are yourself. And when you are, you got it made. I know a man is clever from his answers, but I don't have any respect for him. I know a man is wise by his questions. By his questions, we might add, to himself. Think on these things. It's kind of nice stuff. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and know that you're in my love, and I love you, I love you, I love you.